it's fairly straightforward. The statistics are supplied by Israel. It began with the air assault on Gaza. And by the end of the 22 days, Israel had flown about 2,800 to 3,000 combat missions over Gaza. Every plane returned. Not a single plane was downed. In fact, not a single plane was damaged, which is not altogether too surprising, because the people of Gaza had no anti-aircraft defenses to speak of. After the first week began the land and air assault on Gaza. The Israeli soldiers, they were equipped with special night fighting equipment. Hamas couldn't even see them, let alone tangle with them. No battles, no fighting, no planes down, no planes damaged. Hamas couldn't even see the Israeli soldiers when they entered Gaza, let alone tangle with them. So what happened in Gaza? Actually, we have the testimony, or a testimony which a lawyer might call unimpeachable. That is, we have the testimony of the Israeli soldiers themselves, who after the attack on Gaza gave personal witness to what they experienced. Here's what they had to say. Soldier, there was nothing there. Ghost towns, except for some livestock, nothing moved. Soldier, most of the time it was boring. There were not really too many events. Soldier, I did not see one single Arab the whole time we were there, that whole week. Soldier, everyone was disappointed about not engaging anyone. Soldier, usually we did not see a living soul, except for our soldiers, of course, not a soul. Soldier, go ahead, ask the other soldiers how often they encountered combatants in Gaza. Nothing, no one. Soldier, there was supposed to be a tiny resistance force upon entry, but there just wasn't any. Sounds kind of surreal. Sort of funny. A war with only one side. And it would be funny were it not for the other half. For the other half, those on the receiving end, for the other half, all you have to do, and I would do it now if time allowed me, because I have a computer in front of me, all you have to do, if any of you has a laptop, you can follow along with me. All you have to do is go to Google and enter the words, breaking the silence, breaking the silence. And what will come up on the screen is a collection of testimonies by Israeli soldiers. And then when you have that document on your screen, all you have to do on the search function is enter the word insane. Insane. And you'll see it comes up once, twice, three times, insane. Insane, five times, insane, six times, insane, seven times, insane. The soldiers were interviewed separately, but the same word kept leaping to mind of each soldier. Israel used insane amounts of firepower in Gaza. Israel used insane amounts of firepower in Gaza. No battles, no enemy in the field, no fighting, but Israel used insane amounts of firepower in Gaza. One soldier said, this was firepower such as I had never known. There were blasts all the time. The earth was constantly shaking. Another soldier said, on the ground you hear these thunderous blasts all day long. I mean, not just tank shelling, which was a tune we'd long gotten used to, but blasts that actually rocked the outpost, to the extent that some of us were ordered out of the houses we were quartered in for fear they would collapse. The soldiers invaded Gaza, commandeered the Palestinian homes, are firing into the horizon, but these insane amounts of firepower are causing the ground underneath the soldiers to quake. And so they're told to leave the houses, or the houses will collapse on them. So what did happen in Gaza? Actually, the Israeli soldiers came up with the most telling metaphors or similes. One soldier said, it felt like hunting season had begun. Sometimes it reminded me of a PlayStation computer game. Another soldier said, you felt like a child playing around with a magnifying glass, burning up ants. You felt like a child with a magnifying glass, burning up ants. In fact, that was a remarkably apt, a remarkably appropriate simile. Among the substances Israel used in Gaza was the white phosphorus, which Israel typically uses in its conflicts with its neighbors. I remember from as far back as June 1982, when I first got involved in the conflict as Israel invaded Lebanon. And it was using already back then the white phosphorus. I never paid much attention to the details. It had a sinister sounding name, white phosphorus. But this time I looked at the fine print. White phosphorus, it reaches a temperature of 816 degrees Celsius. 816 degrees Celsius. As Ms. Oprah would say, try wrapping your mind around that one. Well, what did Israel do with the white phosphorus? Human Rights Watch put out a report on what happened in Gaza entitled Rain of Fire. And here's what they concluded. Israel repeatedly exploded white phosphorus munitions in the air over populated areas, killing and injuring civilians and damaging civilian structures. They dropped white phosphorus on a school, a marketplace, a humanitarian aid warehouse. It dropped the white phosphorus on two hospitals, Al-Wafa Hospital and Al-Quds Hospital. According to Human Rights Watch, the hospitals were clearly marked, and there does not appear to have been fighting in the immediate area. By the end of the 22 days, 1,400 Palestinians were dead, of whom up to four-fifths, or 1,200, were civilians. 400 were children. On the Israeli side, 13 Israelis were killed, 3 were civilians, 10 were combatants. Of the combatants, half were killed by other Israelis by accident. The technical term is friendly fire. So, All told, for every 100 Palestinians killed, one Israeli is killed. For every 400 Palestinian civilians killed, one Israeli civilian was killed. And now you have to ask yourself, use your own judgment. 100 to 1, 400 to 1, is that a war or is that a massacre? Every time you hear somebody refer to the Gaza war, or you yourself speak to the Gaza war, you have become, intentionally or not, you've become an instrument of Israeli propaganda. There was no war in Gaza. There was a massacre in Gaza. But of course, Israel has its explanations. It always does. They're very reasonable people. So they say, if all these civilians were killed, it's not our fault. Because you know Hamas, they're crazy, they're fanatical, and they're cowards. They hid behind civilians. They used Palestinians as human shields, and they in effect forced us against our will to kill civilians in Gaza. So how many of you in this room are familiar with the allegation that Hamas used the people of Gaza, the civilians, as human shields? So raise your hand, let's see, raise your hand up high. So it's nearly everybody. If you haven't heard that allegation, you're either suffering from a brain deficit or excessive use of mind-altering drugs, which I'm told are very popular in this part of Canada. Thanks to the wonderful legacy of the 1960s. And all the human rights organizations, they investigated that claim because that was Israel's main response, its main defense. By now, there have been, according to one reliable source, as many as 300 different human rights reports on what happened in Gaza. And they all investigate the claim of human shielding. And they all reached the same conclusion. It just didn't happen. So if I were to ask this gentleman over here, in front of you, yes, if I were to ask you to name the most reputable human rights organization in the world, you would name? Amnesty International is the Nobel Prize winning, the leading human rights organization in the world, and they did an exhaustive study on the question of the human shielding. And here's what they concluded. Contrary to repeated allegations by Israeli officials of the use of human shields, Amnesty International found no evidence that Hamas or other Palestinian fighters directed the movement of civilians to shield military objectives from attacks. Amnesty International found no evidence that Hamas or other armed groups forced residents to stay in or around buildings used by fighters. Amnesty International found no evidence that fighters prevented residents from leaving buildings or areas which had been commandeered by militants. It didn't happen. Now here's the interesting question. Nearly everybody in the room raised their hand when I asked how many of you are aware of the Israeli allegation. Now bear in mind, this room is not a cross-section of Canadian society. It's people who have more than the usual interest in the topic, more than the usual knowledge of the topic, and I think it's fair to say it's overwhelmingly sympathetic to the Palestinian side. So now if I ask you, reacting honestly and candidly, how many of you are aware that the human rights organizations found no evidence that Hamas had engaged in human shielding? Raise your hand. I've been on tour. It's a larger number. You would say probably around 30 in this room. But it's still very telling. Even in a more than usually knowledgeable group of people and sympathetic, the overwhelming number of you did not know that. Which tells you just how powerful the propaganda machine of which we are up against actually is. Amnesty International went further. It said, even if it were true that Hamas had engaged in human shielding, even if it were true, which it wasn't, it still could not explain all of the death in Gaza. Why? Well, let's hear what Amnesty had to say. In the attacks that caused the greatest number of fatalities and injuries, the Palestinian victims were not caught in the crossfire of battles between Palestinian militants and Israeli forces, nor were the Palestinian victims shielding militants or other legitimate targets. Well, if the Palestinian civilians were not caught in the middle of crossfire, and they didn't die because they were in human shields, how did they die? And here's what Amnesty International found. Many were killed when their homes were bombed while they slept. Others were going about their daily activities in their homes, sitting in their yard, hanging the laundry on the roof when they were targeted in airstrikes or tank shelling. How did the children in Gaza die? How those 400 children? How many people in this room hope about? How many? About 400, that would be my guess. So all of this room, all the children, just imagine a room filled with children. How those 400 children died in Gaza? Here's what Amnesty had to say. The children were studying or playing in their bedrooms or on the roof or outside their homes when they were struck by missiles or tank shells. All the human rights organizations concluded that Israel committed multiple war crimes and possibly or definitely crimes against humanity in Gaza. They also concluded that Hamas committed comparable crimes, but on an incomparably smaller scale. After all, how many crimes can ants commit against someone incinerating them with a magnifying glass? After the attack, or after June 18th, the Israeli forces withdrew from the heart of Gaza. But the blockade was kept in place, and now the effects of the blockade were significantly exacerbated, worsened. And that was all purposeful, or it was a purposeful result. Because contrary to what was said, even by Israel's critics, the attack on Gaza was not indiscriminate. In fact, it was a very discriminate attack. So, for example, Israel targeted the only operative flour mill in Gaza, the El Badr flour mill, to make sure after they withdrew that the Palestinians in Gaza would be dependent on Israel for even their most basic staple. Israel targeted and destroyed 22 of Gaza's 28 cement mixing factories because they knew that once they withdrew and kept the blockade in place, the people of Gaza would not be able to rebuild. And there was a lot to rebuild. The estimates are Israel left behind 600,000 tons of rubble. 600,000 tons of rubble. Month passed, and a humanitarian crisis began to develop in Gaza. Israel said, not so. There's no crisis in Gaza. But the human rights organizations, the humanitarian organizations, stepped forward to challenge Israel. Oxfam, it said, contrary to what the Israeli government states, the humanitarian aid allowed into Gaza is only a fraction of what is needed to answer the enormous needs of an exhausted people. The World Health Organization, it said, Israel is blocking vital medical supplies from entering the Gaza Strip. The International Committee of the Red Cross, which very rarely issues public statements, its modus operandi is to work quietly with governments behind the scenes. This time, the ICRC broke precedent, and it said the blockade of Gaza is having a devastating impact on the 1.5 million people living there. And at this point, a kind of strange debate unfolded in the media. On the one hand, Israel said, not true. We've not put the people of Gaza on a starvation diet. We've put them on a starvation plus diet. It's not as dire as the humanitarian organizations allege. The humanitarian organization said, not true. You've put them on a starvation diet. And this whole debate shifted the attention away from the most fundamental point, namely, what right did Israel have to put the people of Gaza on any diet?